This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 27th of July, 2022, and it's FOMC Day, where we have a market with a very clear set of expectations and a very interesting set of expectations as market expressing the view that the Fed is set for another big hike and another series of hikes into year end, but possibly pausing around there or early next year, and then actually cutting quite aggressively by the end of next year. I'll have some perspective on that. I think it's very interesting, that setup and what message the Fed delivers today, of course. As for the market session yesterday, we saw the market continuing lower, sentiment pretty downbeat. We had another weak consumer confidence survey, only a very small further drop in the expectations component of that to the lowest levels since 2013. The bigger drop was in the present situation, probably concerns around inflation and perhaps that slight weakening in the jobs market. It's a very confusing jobs market because we have so many open positions, such a low unemployment level, but we are seeing the sort of steady tick up in those weekly claims numbers. So we'll get the latest one of those tomorrow. As for the sectors, you can see in our equity theme basket overview on slide two, no big surprises here. The market was about minus 1%, a little more than that on the day for the S&P 500, and the higher beta stocks, bubble stocks, et cetera, leading on the downside. No major surprise. Looking for today, of course, it is about whether the Fed surprises on the hawkish side. I think that's going to be more important than any earnings releases, although the market did get quite a boost after the close yesterday as the two big heavyweights reporting on the day, Microsoft and Google. Those stocks jumped. Microsoft on very, very strong guidance for its cloud performance. I believe it was through next year on the report there, or the outlook there, or guidance there. And Google, despite another decrease in its ad sales, their performance otherwise impressing the market, and the stock was sort of primed for ugly news, so it jumped after hours as well. I'll have more perspective on the company's reporting today, but of course, the quality commentary on earnings in general will, of course, come next week when Peter Garnry is back from his well-earned holiday. Okay, I think one of the key things we need to look at is coming into coming inflation reports and going into, of course, the winter heating season eventually. Is the natural gas situation? It is not getting better. It's getting worse. On slide three, some more perspective. A couple of these charts repeats from yesterday, but with, of course, updated data. That European key natural gas contract, the one that trades in Netherlands, the TTF, jumping to above 200. It was at 210 at one point. And I think I've got my unit conversion a bit better control of that today. And so this euro per megawatt hour versus the U.S. unit and the unit used in most other natural gas contracts, dollars per BTU, and with Eurodollar fairly close to parity, it's about a unit conversion of $70. If it's at 210, the European contract, that's equivalent to the U.S. contract trading at 7070. So slightly expensive, in other words, and this, assuming the energy world the energy world is flat, to steal a phrase from the risk is, of course, as long as the U.S. is willing and able to export natural gas, certainly getting these prices. I think some of these companies that do export gas will into the LNG market will certainly have the incentive to do so. Given where prices are, the question is, of course, if this spikes domestic markets, at what point you get a protectionist angle on things in the U.S. But one of the important things here to consider is, and I brought this up before, I put in the little chart again from the BP statistical review here on slide three on the lower left. It shows the energy mix for different major geographies. And you can see that the U.S. natural gas contribution to the overall primary energy mix is very high. And a lot of that for driving electricity, not just heating. And it's a higher percentage than Europe, which you can see on the third bar there. So it is, it's a big deal when we're seeing these U.S. natural gas prices going to, I think it's the highest since 2008, and up 125% year on year. And far more than that, if you look at where the range was during the cheap shale gas era of, let's call it 2013 to 2000, or 2011, 12, whenever it was, through early parts of last year. So this will contribute to inflationary pressures if these prices are sustained, and we have every reason to believe that they will be sustained to some degree by the ongoing war in Ukraine and Russia's and Putin's attempts to leverage the natural gas deliveries into Europe to threaten shutting down the European economy due to their policy towards Russia, and hoping to break up EU solidarity. So we see as well, and we can even look at something like coal, where we can see the Australian Newcastle coal contract there, upper right, at many multiples of the historic range. This is coking coal, generally, as far as I understand, which is used in the steelmaking process, but that steel is also something that the world uses, and that is a export price into China. Generally speaking, that is the main market there, meaning that steel prices would, of course, be under threat of rising. And even on the Chinese domestic market, the thermal coal used there, you can see a contract I put there on the lower right. There was a huge blow up last year. There were shortages of coal and brownouts because of pollution policies and other policy moves that had limited output. But that was addressed. Still, we're at prices that are far above, let's call it 50% above-ish of where we were generally on a moving average basis before last year. So just to point out, there are still other inflationary potential pressures afoot, even if the crude oil price has been somewhat sideways for many months. And on that front, actually, the Biden administration announcing another cut, not another cut, another draw on the strategic petroleum reserves. I believe it was 20 million barrels. Eventually, that reserve is not going to be very strategic at the rate it's being drained to try to address the gasoline prices in the U.S. And then just a little bit of a mishmash of things here on slide four, just to indicate the angle that in this kind of inflation, when it's driven by the supply side, and incomes are not keeping track, that it means that real GDP is being destroyed. And there are different ways to look at that. I pulled some quotes from an FT Alphaville article. I have the link there on the upper right. One of them talks about these flat pack kitchens and vinyl flooring, a company that's been around for a very long time, seeing expressed in pound terms actually falling year on year, despite, I'm sure, their input prices going up and their final prices likely going up as well, to deal with that. And that suggests that the volumes, of course, are decreasing. And then on the left, a quote that FT Alphaville pulled from this Modest Proposal Twitter follower or Twitter handle, in which they discuss Walmart profit warning, indicating that spending is being focused on more on the food side of things, which draws the ability to spend in other areas, meaning they actually have to mark down or deflate prices potentially in other areas if they want to clear that inventory out. So all in all, showing that the effects of inflation are very remarkable in a basket sense, what you can actually spend money on, and the overall drop in volumes. And you're seeing something like a U.S. gasoline demand beginning to fall. This is my chart in the lower right there. We'll get the latest update today for the latest weekly number. I do a six-week rolling figure here just to sort of smooth out so it's not so choppy. And you can see that this here and this is the middle of the height of demand, traditionally speaking, here through the end of summer. And we're seeing it actually declining. And you can see where we are relative to the red line, which is 2019. Okay, let's talk a little bit of FX here, because, of course, with this natural gas situation hanging over Europe, we are very negative on the euro. It's been a bit surprising that it took well into the session yesterday to get some proper euro downside after the news that Putin was cutting gas by half into the Western Europe through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline yesterday. But that drop did occur. We're back to mid-range here, waiting for the FOMC. And of course, our general lean is that the baseline, that we're not going to see any softening from the Fed, but the market is priced for a softening. Now, does the Fed wax resolutely hawkish? That'll be the bigger question and the bigger reaction here. More on that in a moment. But in any case, isolated euro is weak, and for very good reason. With the pressure from natural gas, with the pressure from this new semi-existential threat from Italian politics, etc. Covered that pretty thoroughly yesterday. I think sterling is getting a bit of a free ride here on that weak euro, but just watching sterling, especially if your risk appetite rolls over for potential weakness. And you can see on the FX board there on slide five that the dollar is in very neutral territory, waiting for the message from the Fed, not trending in meaningfully, because the bigger downtrend has been sort of semi-erased based on the trending sort of time frame for the FX board by this latest little sell-off or easing of the dollar strength into the FOMC meeting. And then curious as well on Aussie and CAD. So the Aussie quite strong here. Of course, very good reasons to be concerned about the Australian economic outlook, given concerns about the global economic outlook, traditionally a very pro-cyclical currency. But we have seen a big recent jump in risk sentiment and some of those key commodity prices that are so key for Australia as well. I showed the coking coal price there. This is a tremendous export into China. This is a means that they're, of course, making a huge trade surpluses on this data point, as well as LNG exports. Australia has been at times the world's largest LNG exporter. I don't think it any longer has that status. It's been superseded by the U.S., but still a very large LNG exporter. And of course, natural gas prices are extremely high. Curious to see, though, if we go into a risk sentiment nosedive, potentially from a more hawkish Fed or for whatever reason, recession fears, et cetera, if that appeal from the Aussie side due to its trade surpluses and on the commodity side is revert back to being correlated with risk sentiment. Similarly, for the Canadian dollar, generally also a pro-cyclical currency, very much linked to oil. All right, let's talk a little bit of FOMC and whether the market is priced too aggressively for a downshift in Fed hawkishness. So for some perspective of where we've come from, you have to note where we were heading into that June FOMC meeting. It was very interesting because we had that Wall Street Journal leak that clearly the Fed wanted to bump up expectations to 75 basis points for the rate move in June from the 50 basis points. And you can see on slide 6, that really dramatic mid-June acceleration in the two-year rate as it absorbed that news. But then at the FOMC meeting itself, we saw basically peak rates, and then Fed Chair Powell oddly taking the trouble in the press conference to say that, well, the next rate hike may be maybe only 50 basis points. So that was the peak then. And since then, we've come down about 50 basis points, a little bit less than that in the two-year rate. But a bit more interesting is if we look at where the market is seeing the peak and how quickly it sees Fed policy rolling over, at least according to futures prices and the probability matrix that those indicate. And an interesting Bloomberg report crossed my screen this morning, sent to me by our CIO, Stane Jakobsen, discussing an enormous macro bet that the market is being too aggressive in pricing the Fed rolling over and moving into outright rate cutting regime next year, at least as priced in relative terms for the December of this year pricing versus the December of next year pricing. So essentially, you can see the clip there on slide 6 from that article. 67,000 of these secured overnight financing rate. It's the successor to the old LIBOR contract. It's the futures that trade on this. Essentially, you can mimic the trade with Eurodollar contracts. It's almost the same spread. Even in fact, I think almost this is the basis point. If you were just to express the same thing through the very, very liquid Eurodollar market. So I put on the December 2022 futures contract, Eurodollar contract versus the 2023 December contract there on that chart. And you can see that the spread is around 68 basis points. Basically, in going long the 2022s relative to short the 2023s, it's saying that the Fed will not be rolling over that much in relative terms from wherever those two contracts trade. And with the value of that, the size of that position, it means that every time you get a 1 basis point move, it's a $1.7 million move in the P&L. An enormous macro bet. Very interesting to consider that. And as well, it's interesting to consider, as I show on slide 7, where the market is relative to where that June guidance from the accompanying materials are for the Fed funds rate. So the dot plot median for end next year is at 3.8%. The market is marking December of next year down to, at least in probability terms, 2.9%, almost 100 basis point difference in the market's anticipation of where the Fed will be by late next year versus what the Fed itself said at the June meeting. So interesting to see the guidance there, of course, and very interesting to see as well, I think in the Q&A this evening, how they address any quantitative tightening questions. By the measures that I'm looking at of the Fed's balance sheet, over the last 4 weeks, they've only reduced the balance sheet around $35 billion, and they're meant to be accelerating their tightening up to a pace of $95 billion per month by September. So they've got a lot of tightening to do in terms of liquidity and balance sheet size if they're supposed to be on schedule with that. And as I mentioned yesterday, and I go to slide 8 here, VIX near 25 with this backdrop, are you kidding me? I think there's so many risks afoot here, not just from the hawkish Fed, but also from the natural gas situation in Europe and that threatening into the U.S. as well. as until we get protective measures, the energy markets are global. And you can see here, I just plotted the VIX, the inverted chart of the VIX versus the S&P 500, and just looks a bit complacent to me. We also need to consider, I mentioned this yesterday, but we now have a date that Biden and Xi will have a summit or video call on Thursday, and tensions are very high with this trip by Pelosi. I put in a little Bloomberg headline there, and you see you have a setup that feels like a real game of chicken, because the idea of this visit has been sort of floated. Now, any move that either side takes looks like somebody chickening out. For example, if they allow Pelosi to visit Taiwan without some sort of robust response, or if she cancels the trip, it would look like that the U.S. has been cowed by China. So we've got a real situation on our hands here. The risks are very high. There seem to be some very, very hawkish PLA folks in China against this. They want a strong response to this. It needs to be on our radar. It's a big risk for a worsening of U.S.-China relations on all fronts. And then on the lower right there, I put in a reminder of, and it's a free story. You can see it on eurointelligence.com, a great website, great commentary from I believe he was former FT, Wolfgang Münchau, talking about the tremendous disruption, what is going on, deglobalization and Russia impacts, etc. Brexit, of course, in the case of the UK, but for Germany and for the UK from this current environment. So highly recommended read there. Okay. Catching my breath here. Let's see. Slide 9, we go to the earnings coming up today. And I did mention yesterday that most of these are the correct dates. Occasionally, these have moved since the time frame when we developed this list. One example was 3M, which reported yesterday. I think I had it originally on the calendar for today. A very interesting story there. The stock jumped quite aggressively. It's been a miserable story for the equity market returns of that company. Of late, they had a terrible acquisition some time back of a company that made earplugs. I think it was mostly the military applications, two-way earplugs that they said were good at protecting hearing. It turned out they were not. And they've been discontinued, but they've been sued by one a former soldier for hearing loss. He was awarded this is classic US stuff, $70 million for hearing loss. For one case, and there's something like potentially 115,000 of these cases that could be addressed. But the reason the stock jumped was that, of course, if all these cases go to some sort of payout along those lines, it would completely bankrupt the company. The attempt potentially to spin off a healthcare unit and contain that situation within that healthcare unit. Don't know if they'll get away with that, but the price, the outcome of that particular suit for that company, which is a very large company, very diverse portfolio of products. And if it was free of these legal challenges, the valuation would be extremely different. So just an interesting story to follow if anybody's interested out there. 3M, the ticker is MMM. We have today, by the way, the other report, the one I put a chart up for yesterday, UPS, was a bit interesting. It's down a bit in trading yesterday, around 3%, noting that volumes, and it's not a huge surprise here, but you know, we need to get a couple more quarters clear of all that whole pandemic effect where so many people were getting things shipped because of pandemic related shut-ins, et cetera, lockdowns, et cetera. But they did note that their volumes were down 4% in the US and 13% internationally. This is not in dollar terms, just the pure volumes. Interesting to see there. And that was not good news for the company. Today, the big focus, well, there's so many names there. You can see them on slide 9. But one of the big focus points will be on Meta. After hours, there was a internal meeting where Mark Zuckerberg was not very happy. He's making pretty loud statements about the need to cut headcount, that some employees shouldn't be there. And some of the wording is rather poor PR, I must say, from the company to allow this to spread. But there was a clear frustration from a employee question during that call. It's pretty embarrassing stuff. I think we can expect a pretty ugly report. Interesting to see how they spin it after the close, but the stock has been brutally punished. So it's one of those cases of how thoroughly is it priced for bad news. And then further out this week, I think the bigger day is Thursday with Apple and Amazon reporting after hours. Some concerns around Apple because of people potentially waiting for the next round of products this fall, and concerns that their performance in China has been weak due to lockdowns and a sluggish economy there. So some interesting names. Thursday is the peak day for earnings this week, but plenty of other names to distract us in the meantime. All right, macro calendar. For today, we have the FOMC meeting, obviously, up this evening with the Powell press conference afterwards. Has a bit of added weight because of the lack of new accompanying materials refresh. That doesn't come until the September meeting. We'll watch those the U.S. data points. There's some more housing-related stuff there, pending home sales. We saw a very weak new home sales yesterday. No big surprise there. We're going to see a cratering U.S. house market in terms of activity, with prices eventually to follow. The May prices were still rising quite rapidly in the latest house home price index report out of the U.S., but we'll have to see. We know that the activity generally leads the price by at least, let's call it a year or so. And then the rest of the week, we have Australian retail sales tonight. There was a CPI report, by the way, out of Australia, the core slightly hotter than expected, the headline slightly cooler, the market leaning for 50 basis points quite heavily. So the vast majority looking for 50 basis points from the RBA next week, but they could surprise on the downside there, according to some. So there's a two-way reaction function around that. Thursday, again, the Biden she talk and the spin off of that is very key. Do we see some loud red lines being laid out on the Pelosi visit, et cetera? I think the situation extremely dangerous around that. Q2 GDP estimate, this is the first estimate for the cycle, and then the PCE inflation data point for June on Friday. All right, I think it's going to be an interesting one around this FOMC meeting. I think the risks are very high here relative to the current complacency in the market, as I've expressed. So let's keep our helmets on here. Let's see how things stand. You can stay tuned on Twitter. To my Twitter feed, I'll be live commenting on whatever the FOMC is delivering tonight, especially in the statement and any market reaction to that. So stay tuned for that, and I'll have a wrap, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.